I'm holding in my hands a book that I read last week. It is a novel titled The Reading, and it is by an old friend of mine, Barbara Monnier.
Emphasis on old.
What?
Go ahead, Rick.
Well, no, this is this book. This book has to do with age, dear. This book has to do with age in a fascinating way. Rarely have I said about a book that it is at once literate and lyrical, and by saying those two things, I don't want to put anybody off. It is wildly entertaining and deeply thought-provoking, too. Barbara, you've really outdone yourself. You and I have talked on the radio, and I think in person a couple times about your previous novels. You've really outdone yourself with this book. So can you take a compliment?
Well, thank you.
Can you take a compliment?
I'm not that great at it, but I really do sincerely thank you. That means a great deal to me coming from you.
Well, the protagonist of this book is a writer named Esme, who is in the name inspired by a famous writer in his short story for Esme in Love and Squalor. The writer, of course, being the elusive and to my mind, strange J.D. Salinger. What's the inspiration for this book, Missy? I have the feeling that it is. There's a lot of you in here. Yes.
You know, it's funny. Everybody has that impression reading this book, and I would say, not to be cagey, but no more or less than any of the other books I've written. You know, I'm always fascinated with where books or any art, any creative endeavor for that matter, what's the origin point?
Sure,
what's the first kernel of the first kernel? And this was based on an actual event. I did have somebody come to a reading of mine before COVID.
Uh-huh.
I was doing some readings about the one-year anniversary time of my book, Pushing the River.
Sure, which was a great book, too, by the way.
Thank you. And somebody had flown in from Boston, unbeknownst to me, and was in the audience and had come.
That would set me off, too. His name wasn't Tom Killarney, as it is in this book,
no,
is it? Okay.
No.
You're protecting.
Cleverly disguised, yes.
Wow.
And he, by the way, does know of this book. He's read this book. He's all in favor of this book. But that, you know, why did that strike me as an event that could actually be the starting point of a novel? Who knows exactly? But I really got captivated with the idea. And I really did get sort of caught up in the idea of this older writer going back and reflecting on this time of her life. And that's about as far as I went. And you won't believe this, Rick, but I actually then put it on Facebook. I put it out to the Facebook community
world,
saying, give me some ideas for a name of a main character who's young, she's precocious, she's sort of alienated, and I got hundreds of responses.
Yeah, of course, of course.
I also got yelled at. I just have to interject that a couple people, social media being what it is, felt compelled to say I had no business writing if I couldn't think of the names of my own characters.
Oh, for God's sake, that's ridiculous. Well, one of the great... Yes, go ahead, but...
So let me tell you this. I made a short list, and one of the names on the short list was, of course, Esme.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started researching things about I think I had narrowed it down to four names, and I came up with the J.D. Salinger short story, and I read it again, and I thought, okay, I think that's her name, and I'm going to try and work this around, sort of loosely the structure and the themes of the short story.
It is a good short story. I'm not the world's biggest Salinger fan, but that is a very, very fine short story.
It really is. It really is. It packs a lot into a short, you know, it's economical, which I always love.
Yes.
I try and try and do it in my own writing, and it has very different sections with different tones, which I definitely tried to do in this book with the older voice.
Barbara, one of the amazing things that you pull off in this book is the way it moves through time. I mean, you've got here a 40-some year gap between what you're writing and where you're going with this thing. And the voice, it doesn't alter that much, but it's consistent with the time in which you're writing. That's a high compliment. If you're confused by my inarticulate
observation. Wasn't inarticulate, and I followed you. That's exactly what I was going for.
Yeah.
And I'm really trying to paint a picture of what would this person be noticing and thinking about at this time in her life, and this time in world history, for that matter. Because it's 1973-74, and how would that same person have grown, matured, changed over time, but it is still the same person, and she does still notice the world in the same way.
Yeah, I think you've done a remarkable job. When we come back after a relatively short break, we'll talk about some of the men in Esme's life. Gino, Liam, there are a number of them. And also about Esme's parents. The way in which the book begins. Do you mind if I read a little of this, Barbara, when
no,
we come
please
back?
Do. Please
I'm
going to
read a little. And then I'll talk about the event Barbara and I are having Tuesday at the Hideout. Where else? That's the only place I have events. And I'll be pleased to sit on stage with her and talk about it. Barbara, we'll be back in a few minutes. Welcome back. I'm going to keep author and my old friend Barbara Monnier here for the rest of this half hour. But that doesn't preclude you from being scared of the weather report not coming to the Hideout on Tuesday. We will be at the Hideout together. I've been there a million times. But I want before we get back into the book, I want to read something that Barbara wrote in her fine, and I mean really fine, fifth novel, The Reading, about her protagonist in here is Esme. And she's a relatively well-known and successful writer. And she writes, beginning chapter one, I have been reading my books aloud to audiences and signing copies and shaking hands and making small talk for most of my life. I've never been able to figure out why I get so nervous sometimes. pardon me. Barb, the show has been a little longer than normal, so my voice is getting kind of shot here. I'll read that later. Barbara, remind me when we met. You write in the book in your little author's biographical note, Barbara Monnier has been writing since her earliest days when she composed in crayon on paper with extremely wide lines. She studied at Yale and the University of Michigan, and then somewhere along that line you met me, didn't you? When did we first meet? Remind me.
I moved to Chicago in 1980, and I started working for Remains Theater in 1984 and met you right around then for the 4 years that I was working with Remains Theater. And
what were you doing for Remains? I remember you in the office when the dog that I owned with my wonderful first wife, Jennifer, came to the office.
Deadline,
the greatest dog in the world.
Well, there was a period of time when I was the only paid employee at Remains.
I can imagine.
Short of cleaning the bathrooms, I was in charge of trying to find material for them, new plays to look at. To a certain extent, I wrote grants. I was in charge of the grant writing, and I did, along with Chris Peterson and some other helpers, a lot of the advertising and marketing. So basically, other than the accounting, which we outsourced, pretty much everything that was done in the office.
Were you writing fiction at the time?
I was I had a very lengthy break when I was rearing children. And strange as it may sound, I didn't realize in this until more recently in my life, but I actually found being a parent to be very creative for me.
Yeah.
And I wrote until my son, who's my older, was probably getting close to 2 years old, and then didn't write again until he was getting towards the end of high school.
Wow.
So, yeah, what, 15 plus year break.
When, because you had done some prize winning writing while you were in a university, as they say. What was it like when you came back to it did you have renewed confidence, or were you a little shaky when you came back to it?
Well, I'm not sure I have steely confidence yet, Rick, but
but then you're like then you're like 99% of all the authors I know.
Exactly. I mean, it goes with the territory. I had started out writing poetry, and I truly say this with no false modesty, I really do not know why I got the accolades for it. I did. I was truly a terrible poet.
There's a nice poem in this book, though.
Well, I mean, that was my best attempt at what an 18-year-old who was supposedly a pretty good 18-year-old poet.
It's good.
Right.
Yeah, it's good. It's good. All right, I'm going to read this line now before we take another break, but I'm keeping Barbara on this entire time. You can go to her website, Barbara Monier, that's M-O-N-I-E-R, author, BarbaraMonierAuthor.com, to see all of her books. You've been on the show to talk about the two previous ones. Now I will read what I was planning to read before my voice went out. I have been reading my books aloud to audiences and signing copies and shaking hands and making small talk for most of my life. I have never been able to figure out why I get so nervous sometimes, jumpy and clammy and handshaking, and other times not nervous at all. At those times, I feel comfy and relaxed, like every single person staring at me is a kind and kindred soul who wishes me nothing but the best. But this was one of the nervous times. She's talking about the time that she re-meets the person she hasn't seen in 40 some years. It's a great beginning. We will talk more about her fifth novel, The Reading, in a couple minutes. As I said at the beginning of this interview about Barbara Monier's latest novel, The Reading, it is not only literate and lyrical, and I don't want those two things to put you off. It is wildly entertaining and terribly thought-provoking, and I find there are moments in here, Barb, I don't want to give away too much, but that the letter that is delivered to Esme when she is 5 years old, which she cannot read till later in life, is just one of the most chilling things. You don't even find out about it until later, but it's one of the most chilling things I've ever read. That's a remarkable bit of writing from you. So another piece of praise for you.
Thank you. And, you know, I have had several readers who've asked me, why didn't you actually include the whole letter? And that her father wrote.
Yeah.
And your response is why I didn't.
You don't need the whole, you don't need any kind of, it is very much, I find, to the point, to the chilling, sad point. You do a remarkable job. When you go back in time, the whole college section is what I'm going to call it. Was that fun to write? It must have been, Barb.
It was.
Yeah.
It was. And, you know, I will tell you that the real person who came to my reading that this novel is based on got in touch with me after he read the completed book, and he said, wow, I just can't believe how good your memory is. I don't remember any of that stuff. Your memory for detail, and I felt like that's because it's fiction.
Yeah, you should have said, wait a minute. Wait a minute. That wasn't me. That's not you. These are people I invented.
Right.
much of this book, Barbara, was obviously written during this crazy 2.5 years we've just lived. I sense the shadow of the pandemic here and there in the book. Is that, am I misreading?
No, definitely. It is definitely there, and it's meant to, I mean, I love your description that it's a shadow. Mm-hmm. It's meant to be just sort of looming in the background.
Yeah.
And casting the one scene where the man has had the accident,
yes.
Again, without, don't
yeah.
think it's really a spoiler alert, but I really tried to write that with almost a surreal quality,
mm-hmm.
which is the way
mm-hmm.
everything seemed. Just so your audience knows what we're talking about, some of it is written at the beginning of COVID when we're in lockdown.
Right.
And it's so new, and everything has shut down, and very few people are even out and about. And nobody who is out and about is sure how to deal with one another.
Yeah.
It's just...
Yeah.
But you're absolutely right, Rick. It's meant to be, it's not dealt with very intensively or terribly directly, but it looms.
Yeah, I think,
definitely.
Yeah, however you pulled that off, you did so remarkably, because I sense it, but I'm not beaten down with it. And believe me, I've read a few novels in the last year or so where I'm beaten to death by COVID. Talk to me about, there are some, in the book, there are remarkable relationships throughout. I find the most interesting relationship, I like some of these guys in here, but it's the single mother, and Esme is the one that really, the book begins with Esme's mother about to go in and see a doctor to find out if she is pregnant with child. That's a complicated relationship, but I found it, I like the mother. Should I? I'm serious.
Well,
I know it's not your mother. I know it's not your mother.
Huh? No, it's not my mother.
Yes, I know. It's a work of fiction, Barb. It's a work
right.
of fiction. Yes.
That's an excellent question. She is, in many ways, very likable.
Yep.
And very dedicated to her daughter, and in many other ways, very off-putting.
Yeah, and in many ways, remote, too, I thought.
Yes.
It's a weird combination
yes.
of loving and remote at the same time,
yes.
Which makes for, frankly, a fascinating, fascinating character.
Good. I'm glad that's exactly what I was going for. Exactly what I was going for. And your question is completely to the point. Should you like her? And I think that's essentially the way Esme grapples with her mother, that there is this intense bond because it has just been the two of them.
Yep.
Esme's father has been missing from the pictures since she was 5 years old,
yep.
and it is just the two of them. And they have this very interconnected, intense thing. And it's also fraught. And they hide things from each other.
Yeah, there are secrets in this book. There are secrets in this book. I love the way in which, too, the Esme's, I would like Esme. There's no question about that. I might not fall in love with her, but I would certainly like her. When you're drawing characters and you are making characters, do you, Barbara Monnier, eventually feel comfortable with their voice?
Eventually being the perfect word,
mm-hmm.
yes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I start out any project, but right now we're talking about the reading, I don't know, and there's the younger Esme and the older Esme, and they're the same person, but
right.
as you said, they're many years apart, more than 40.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know them that well, and
yeah.
they have to just sort of inhabit me. And I let them do that and see what they ultimately teach me and tell me about who they are. And then that sort of drives what they say and do.
Yeah, and you must. And there must be in that process. I don't write a lot of fiction, but there must be in that process a real sense of occasionally a real sense of surprise where you're.
Oh, completely.
Yeah. Taken aback and saying, "Wow, that's the way you feel. That's the way she feels." It is. We've tried not to give away too much of the a plot of this book. You will. It is eventually, I think, it is ultimately, to my mind, quite uplifting. I think Esme sort of finds her, rediscovers herself. Is that an accurate sort of read?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Good.
And, you know, I thought that what my friend and Chicago writer Rita Dragonette wrote in her review.
Oh, I love Rita. She's great.
Yeah. And she said the ending is not so much a climax as a massive epiphany. And I think that was really well put.
I do think it's really, well put. Yeah. Well, she's a smart, Rita's a smart writer and a smart critic, too.
She is.
Barb, do you live here now? Where do you live?
Here, being in Chicago, I'm in Evanston.
That's close enough. You don't have to be in the city. Yeah. That'll make it easier for us to have this event Tuesday night at 7:30 at the Hideout. You can go to thehideoutchicago.com or just show up. I know what the crowd scene's like there. Just show up, and we'll be talking more about the book and about your career as a writer, because I'm very curious. Do you feel part of some of the people commenting on your book very favorably on your website are, you know, Chicago writers I know. Do you feel part of that, you know, what passes for these days the literary community in Chicago?
Well, you know, of course, like everything else, the literary community took a big, giant hit during COVID when all of the readings and salons and you know, Chicago has a number of really great salons that do monthly readings and all of that stuff shut down. And I think it's almost all, everything I know about is back up and running again, but some of it very recently. So I do not, I mean, I keep in touch with a lot of the Chicago writing community, like we always have in writing, and but I don't feel as connected to it yet, because it certainly is a goal, as I did before COVID, when I was really regularly going out and about and attending everybody's things. I get together with my writer friends.
Mm-hmm.
And have a writer's group that's been very important in the writing of this book and important to me. But Chicago writing community, it's definitely a desire to get more settled
One of the other things about it is you're writing novels. I know a lot of people in the Chicago literary community who haven't written a word in 20 years. And they just like to sit in saloons and talk about books they may write. Barb, I got to tell you, this is a great, great, great novel, The Reading. It is filled with not just one, but a number of remarkable characters who, once you meet them, you will never forget them. I can't wait to see you Tuesday. That'll be fun on stage. And the great thing there is we can talk more specifically about what happens in the book, and then we can make the people buy it.
We can, and we can eat cake, because I'm going to get a really nice cake with a picture of the cover on it. So
fabulous.
Excited.
It's a cool cover. Can't wait to see you.
Can't wait to see you.
Okay, hon.
We will meet on Tuesday.
See you Tuesday. Bye.
All right. Bye. Bye-bye.